Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Progressive Britain podcast. This is a podcast with the opinion that progressive politics can change the world. Today, we come to you from sunny Peterborough, where we've been out campaigning in the by-election, which is next Thursday. And I'm joined by Stefan Rolnick, Seb Dance MUP, and Lord Spencer Livermore. Lovely to have you.
Good to be.
Now, we've just had a lovely lunch here in this little cafe. It's called the Chai Cafe. Highly recommend it. And it's our first podcast since the European elections. So I'm here to say congratulations, Seb.
Thank you.
Woo-hoo. And, well, I'll ask you a simple question.
Good.
What the hell happened now?
That's not a simple question.
I know.
Actually, no, it's a simple question. It's just not a simple answer. Look, there's several things that are happening. Obviously, the first thing we should note, I think, because it's kind of glossed over, is the complete and utter collapse of the Conservative Party as a functioning, coherent party. I think we are looking at a fundamental split that probably will never heal. And we'll see, obviously, what happens with the resulting leadership contest and the extraordinary parade of people who are completely unfit to lead the country. What worries me is what replaces the Tory party, what comes in to fill that vacuum. And that brings me on to the second thing, which is that the Labour Party, I don't think at the moment, is in the position it needs to be to stop that vacuum being filled by the likes of Farage and nationalists and isolationists and populists. And I think our position on Europe showed that we are not being clear enough in trying to defend the country from that.
Before we look too far forward, could you just give us a sense of how that the election night went across Europe? Because there's different stories for different countries.
There are. I mean, broadly speaking, the populist wave wasn't as big as we had feared. The main parties largely held. There's been huge increases for the Green Party, particularly in Germany, where they've overtaken us, the SPD, to take second place. And the Liberals as well, the ALDE group, which is what the Liberal Democrats belong to, they've also done very well across Europe. So it's very interesting. I mean, the S&D, which is our group, have done well in pockets. So we've done well in Spain, in Portugal, in Denmark. And the EPP, which is the main centre-right grouping, has basically underperformed in pretty much every member state. And I think what we're seeing is that, you know, the centre-right's trying to ape a lot of what the far-right's doing. Chasing a particular vote in order to, I don't know, what they see as solidifying their base. And it's not working. It's not working because people don't trust them, and they see the far-right alternatives as the authentic offering.
What do you think about the rise of the far-right across Europe then? Do you think that this election result sort of confirms all the fears that we had, or do you think that sort of the growth of the Greens and the Liberals means that there is a way back?
I think the latter. That being said, of course, in Britain, the Brexit Party had the most seats. In France, I can't remember what they're called, the Rassemblement National, I think, won the most seats. Salvini won the most seats in Italy. And these, of course, big member states. That is extremely worrying, but you also need to look at who came second in all of those elections. And the Macron's group, for example, I think they're only one seat behind. So and of course that's the case, incidentally, with the Brexit Party in England, in that you look at the next one down, and in many cases they're not far behind. So yes, I think there is a hope, but you know, it's got to be in being clear and unambiguous about your position on, well, certainly in the British case on Brexit, but in the rest of Europe, about the kind of society you want, open or closed.
I think one of the other interesting stories of the night was the turnout, and in you know, some places increased turnout. I think one of the really interesting things about the European Union and kind of the different layers of democracy and bureaucracy is that often these things, to even to people who are interested in politics, have always seen been like kind of anonymous, and you know, we don't really know the details. But now so many people are watching, and people are actually getting engaged with who's going to be the next president and stuff like that. So could you just tell us, because I know that those decisions about who gets appointed as head of different things directly relates to those elections. So could you just flesh out for us the different positions up for grabs and how what happened that night affects that?
Yeah, of course. So the composition of the parliament will have an implication on who is chosen as the commission president, for example. Now, this is ultimately a decision made by the member states. The EU is member state led. And the council will have had their first meeting already to kind of flesh out what the lay of the land is amongst the heads of government. But they need to take account of the parliamentary composition, because it's a parliament that approves commission appointments, not just the president, but also the other commissioners as well. The election results are interesting because the EPP fell in numbers and did very badly, in fact, in many big member states, much worse than they were expecting. And because the S&D, yes, we lost seats, but we didn't lose as many as we thought we were going to lose, particularly again in big member states. That means that the gap between us, between the EPP and the S&D, is actually much smaller than was first projected. That means, therefore, if you can get a coalition with whoever, the Greens, ALDE, and both of them are now big, sizable groups. In fact, the decisions they make in the forthcoming parliament will be really important. Then it's possible that you could get commission candidates and even the commission president, who knows, that aren't necessarily, it's not necessarily going to be an EPP person. Of the EPP people that are being put forward, EPP people, there's a tongue twister. Manfred Weber is the Spitzenkandidat, so he's the lead candidate for the EPP, as opposed to Frans Timmermans, who of course came up on the doorstep every single day in the election. But the other name for the EPP is Michel Barnier, who is very popular. In fact, the Irish government have already said they'd like him appointed. So we'll see. We'll see this kind of tussle between the so-called Spitzenkandidat process, i.e. the person who's put up by the political groups, that, you know, should that be respected, or should it just be the numbers in the parliament? Can a coalition come together that means that it's not necessarily the leading party? I mean, that's obviously, I would prefer that, because I think it better reflects the level of support out there. But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Just for the lay people among us, what does that actually mean for your average sort of person sat in their front room listening to this podcast now? Does it affect Brexit? I know we're due to leave on the 31st of October now, but will there be a significant change based on where there is an EPP candidate or a candidate chosen by a group of smaller parties?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, if we want the best people in place to be sympathetic to Britain and Remainers, i.e. people that want to keep the door open for us, then we're going to want the Socialists and the Greens to work very closely together. We're going to need a lot of the ALDE members as well. Guy Verhofstadt, who leads the ALDE group, is not particularly keen on Britain staying, whereas Frans Timmermans, the S&D leader, is very much keen on seeing what can be done to keep Britain in. The EPP are somewhat ambivalent. You've got to remember, of course, that if the Brits go, the EPP don't lose any members, because, in fact, they gain members, because in some member states they get an additional allocation of seats. Very small allocation, but hey, an increase is an increase. Whereas the S&D will lose 10 Labour MEPs, and the replacements in the increased seats that some member states will get won't match that loss. So, you know, there's a bit of kind of political self-interest going on here, but you're going to ask me what that means for the ordinary person, and that's a very clear question.
What I was about to ask was, you said that the EPP was a centre-right group, right? So that means that, just to clarify with people at home, that means our Conservatives don't sit with the centre-right.
No, they sit with a group called the ECR, which is, how can I put it, a hodgepodge collection of extraordinary parties from around predominantly Eastern Europe. There's the Law and Justice Party in Poland is a member of the ECR. They're not great people, But hey, they've only got four Tories now to join them. So we'll see what they make of that new group.
After the election, there was a kind of very obvious attempt on both sides to spin it as, you know, Brexit Party won in terms of regional system and they like came out on top. But also there was a kind of spin of, well, if you count up the Remain parties, do you include Labour in that? And, you know, that's something we debate on this podcast quite a lot. If you count up the Remain parties versus the Leave parties, was it a win for Remain or was it a win for Leave? And I think actually what in the space in between, which doesn't get said a lot, which was actually was quite a strong showing for the Remain parties, but it's also incredibly concerning that a party led by Nigel Farage did that well. Coming out of that, I mean, how do you feel about how this is going to play out now? Yeah. Obviously, a lot of it is about parliamentary arithmetic in terms of whether a deal gets through Parliament. But in terms of the country, has anything, to borrow a phrase, changed?
Has anything changed?
I know.
Nothing has changed. No, I think quite a lot has changed. Okay, so first off, yes, the success of the Brexit Party in the European elections is astonishing. There's no point pretending otherwise. You know, it is a new party that in terms of a brand, right? And it launched very recently. Farage is obviously incredibly charismatic. He's managed to bring a lot of people over. But at the same time, it's also just a rebrand of an existing party. It is the UKIP. It's the modern version of UKIP. And, you know, in terms of the increase in vote, it varies. But in London, for example, and apologies, it's not because I'm obsessed with London. It's because I only know my own regional figures. Because I do obsess about the voting figures in the election I just stood in. Apologies. The increase in the vote from UKIP in 2014 to the Brexit Party in 2019 is only 30,000. It's very, very small. And the increase for the Liberal Democrats is nearly 500,000. So I think there is something going on here. I think the clear outcome in terms of Remain versus Leave, there is a very clear majority for parties that have a public vote as part of their manifesto. Now, you can argue how clear or unambiguous we were in terms of that commitment, but we had it. And there is a very clear majority for parties that supported the public vote. But even if you don't include Labour, there's a majority for parties that want to campaign to remain.
Well, let's have that conversation about Labour, because I guess we can't put it off, given the podcast that we are. There was quite a lot of stuff over the last few days about, I mean, it's, you know, been happening for God knows how long now, but about whether Corbyn had actually backed a confirmatory vote or not. And I feel like I'm of the position until he gets up and says, we are going to make a public vote happen. I'm not sure, you know, because there's so many times before I've been burned and think we've got a public vote. Question one, do we have a public vote? And I guess question two, if not, what are the levers that people listening to this podcast have to kind of push on that to make that happen?
Yeah. So like you, very frustrated. I thought the reactions after the election results were astonishing and really positive. And there was a lot of humility shown, a recognition that we have to change our policy. And since then, I mean, what are we now? It's only Thursday. Since then, it's kind of changed back a bit. Another kind of counter messages have been put out, and it's just exhausting. And frankly, it's doing untold damage to us, because I think people are willing to kind of accept that people make mistakes and you've got to change messaging depending on election results. And that's understandable. And it might take people time to get there. But after a while, they start to lose any patience. And if you keep chopping and changing, going backwards and forwards, talking to two different sets of people and telling them the exact opposite, then people will just give up. And the longer this goes on, the more damage it'll do and the deeper it will go. You're finding it here on the doorstep, here in Peterborough. From both sides, people are switching to the Brexit Party and people who are switching to the Liberal Democrats or the Greens. You're seeing it here. So you can't maintain this kind of tightrope thing. It doesn't make any sense. And the other thing I think it's really damaging for is, even if people don't have Brexit as their number one concern, and most people don't when it comes to certainly in either a by-election or a general, you need the permission to be able to talk about other things. And if you're not clear on a key issue like this, you don't have the permission to talk about other things. So that's where it's doing us key damage. I think the levers that people have, you know, we've got to keep the pressure up. And I think it's made enormous difference in the last few days. Obviously, the election results were unavoidable and they were a clear, stark reminder of the need to be clear on our policy. But actually, just keep going, just keep hammering it. Even when you think, oh, that's a great thing that X frontbencher just said, just keep going, because you can bet your bottom dollar that in, you know, 24 hours time, someone will say the complete opposite.
And a quick note on that, if you haven't been to labourssay.eu already and written to the shadow cabinet, please do so. Thousands of you have already done it. And we know from our actions in the past that MPs do listen.
They do.
And they do respond and they want to hear from you. So please do that. I guess it's now time to take a quick break. As always, if you have a pro-European Labour Party friend and they haven't heard of the Progressive Britain podcast, what are they doing? Send it to them now. And we will be back in a couple of seconds to talk about being on the doorstep in Peterborough.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back. So we've been out on the doorstep here in Peterborough this afternoon. And so I'm going to ask our lovely group of Labour activists here three quick fire questions about what they've learned. The first one being your best campaigning moment of the day. Who wants to go first? Spencer, you look like you want to go first.
Well, undoubtedly when someone actually answered the door to me, I was starting to take it quite personally after 4 or 5 doors when no one would open the door. And I finally got to speak to a voter.
But thankfully, no dogs.
No, well, I had to run away from 2 doors that had big dogs. So,
and I did get that dog, and now I have a fear of dogs.
Dev, you got on?
Oh, gosh. I guess just talking to a voter who switched the Brexit Party from us and then crossing the road and talking to a voter who switched the Liberal Democrats. And I'm like, okay, it's not just London. This is good. It's everywhere. That's the best moment.
That's the best moment.
That's the best moment.
Activists, please come up to Peterborough and knock on some doors.
That's not a good moment.
That's not a good moment.
Stefan, you got one?
Again, I don't know if this is good. I'd say it was interesting, but when I was deep in conversation with a lovely gentleman about how we solve the problems with the NHS and some kind of lifespan reduction policy he had that was very disturbing that we briskly moved on to. I think everyone's got those stories from when you've been
compulsory euthanasia. Compulsory euthanasia.
Yeah, we can workshop it.
He was a nice man.
And Alison, last but not least.
Well, obviously, I was doing the board looking at the numbers. So my favourite moment was finding out how accurate the data was in Peterborough, which is a very sad, loserish tendency that I have. But it was an excellent voter selection. In Peterborough. It was very satisfying.
Well, it was good for us too, though, because it meant we knocked on doors with nice people.
Yeah.
And no, everybody, that made a massive difference.
It did. Everybody in Peterborough was
Can
lovely.
I change that to my nicest moment? Because my nicest moment wasn't very nice, but yours is actually, and actually, of all the people that I spoke to, they were predominantly Labour.
They were. I mean, there was a lot of Labour votes there. And it's one of those things where if you look at the papers and what goes on television and politics, and you think that's what politics is, and actually you realise most people are taking in very little of that. They're quite sharp about what's going on in politics, but for most people, there's bigger issues. And there's a lot of people who share our values and they still do, despite the chaos.
Fantastic. And just to add mine, mine was when I knocked on a door and spoke to a man who did not want to speak to me about politics. But when I asked him about his classic car, he told me how great it was that apparently he has to pay no tax and doesn't have to wear a seatbelt. So Good for him. Good luck on the roads.
A Hillman Imp, no less. My parents drove a Hillman Imp.
And how much better the old cars are than the modern rubbish.
The new cars,
he was not keen on modern cars.
Who doesn't want to fly through the windscreen these days, eh?
That's what freedom is, isn't it?
Way.
Next, one message that you would take from today's session on the doorstep. Stefan?
Again, I had several very interesting conversations today. Again, one of the most interesting messages was somebody who suggested that maybe back in the day, bringing back some kind of Guy Fawkes would be a good idea, which actually, you know, I don't want to joke about that because very disturbingly, I think one of the things that I did take away from the doorstep is that people are just livid with everything. And you can kind of connect with these people. And I think what I realized was that everyone's really livid with the way things are going. And actually what they're looking for is an explanation. And I think some of the approaches that have been put around in the Labour Party about Brexit actually are about not giving those people the explanation they need. We're kind of hedging our bets on that explanation. So my one message coming away from that is like, we need to explain to people why immigrants are good.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. Anyone else?
Spencer? The thing I would take away, I suppose, is austerity. That, you know, it's a serious point for a moment. But, you know, we talk about the word austerity and we talk about it in a policy terms. But when you go out on the doorstep today, you get to see the actual implications of what that word means. You get to see the fly tipping that is all around. You get to see the council cuts. You get conversations with people about how their services have been cut and how their lives have been affected by those cuts. So, you know, it's very easy for us to be in London and talk about the word austerity, but suddenly you get to see what austerity actually means to real people. And that was definitely a strong message I got both in conversations, but just in observing the kind of the conditions that people were having to live in locally.
Mm. Yeah, no, I just on building on that, I think as Ali said, the values that people have, I think, are fairly solid. I don't think they're changing, but it's whether or not our position is clear enough, and it chimes with the way people think. I'm not entirely sure that that's coming across as clearly as it should, and so people, when they want to express their frustration, and they do, I think they basically bound us in with the government as in you're all the same, and that's kind of heartbreaking. And you have to spend a little more time explaining that we're not the same.
Absolutely, Alison. Have you got anything?
I mean, I agree with Spencer. Basically, when you talk to people directly, you remember what's important to them and you see what this government has done to people and why we have a duty to try and change it.
One thing that I got is I spoke to a couple of first-time voters on the doorstep, and normally I'd expect them to be sort of really engaged. It's their by-election, blah, blah, blah. See a lot of it in the news, but actually they just didn't know who to vote for. Mm. They didn't really care. They seemed pretty despondent about the whole thing, and that's not the kind of democracy we want to live in. But let's cheer us all up. If everyone here could tell Jeremy Corbyn, near the Labour Party, one thing, what would it be?
That in order to win, you need to get numbers. That voting and elections, it's all about numbers. You've got to get more votes than the next lot. And we need to really focus on how we win people's votes.
I suppose mine would come directly from one lady I spoke to on the doorstep. She said she's always been Labour all her life, and she'll definitely vote Labour. But she says how desperately we need a Labour government, and why is Labour not further ahead of the Conservatives right now? And she was very concerned that it's so desperately needed a change of government, but Labour is just not far enough ahead of the Conservatives to make that happen.
Yeah, and I think in order to do that, we need to be clear about our values and clear about how we fight the people who are claiming to represent the values that people have. You know, let's be explicit, the Brexit Party here is trying to convince people that they're the ones, you know, that have their backs, and they're not. They don't give a, you know...
You mean the millionaire flying, candidate is not it's not sticking up for
exactly,
ordinary people.
Exactly. But, you know, the fact that it's difficult, challenging to get our message across speaks volumes, I think. We need to be much, much clearer.
Yeah, I mean, I just completely echo that. I just say clarity. I think the one thing that's guaranteed to turn voters off you when they're looking for answers right now is if they feel like you're hedging your bets. And I think the one thing I felt on the doorstep was people, you know, they don't have a lot of time and they can't engage with the news, you know, all day, every day, because people have got more important things to do. But they can tell when somebody's not being clear with them. And all I'd say is people know they found us out and we need to do something about that.
Yeah, I totally echo that. It feels like Labour Party recently is sort of had lots of energy. And it feels like since the European elections and the local elections, that sort of energy in our position of various things has meant that we've all just gone a bit flat, which isn't very nice. We should be the party of change and the party of progress. Yes. And on that note, saying we should be the party of progress, I think we'll wrap up there. Thank you to the good people of Peterborough. Thank you all for coming. Thank you to the lovely people at Chai Cafe. Please come along if you're in Peterborough. And we will see you on Tuesday. In the meantime, please subscribe, rate and review. It's very helpful. Thank you. You've been listening to the Progressive Britain podcast. The music was When in the West by Blue Dot Sessions, licensed under Creative Commons, and many thanks to our fantastic and long-suffering producer, Caroline Crampton.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.